A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 288. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about 1990. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. So yes, the always watchable Edward Woodward stars in a BBC drama that ran in 1977 and 1978. A total of 16 50-minute episodes spread over 2 series, and it is a grim vision of a possible future Britain harshly ruled by the authoritarian PCD, the Public Control Department.
Yes, absolutely. And there is an idealistic journalist who is quite prominent in the resistance and quite publicly known as a journalist who stands against what this authoritarian government wants to do. And that is Jim Kyle, played by Edward Woodward. And of course, the title 1990 is indeed a reference to 1984, although this version of the future is more similar to present day than Orwell's 1984 is.
Okay, so we talked a little bit about the basic setup in our last episode. We'll get on to the themes of some of the episodes because, like many a 70s TV show here in Britain, the episodes were sort of largely standalone, although the world of 1990 is gradually revealed to us with various hints and clues and throwaway lines here and there. But also some of the themes and characters become more important as the two series develop. So, you know, 16 episodes, 2 series, lots to cover in a way, Brian.
Yes, they had a lot of themes in here about this authoritarian government and sort of what could go wrong in future government and society, that sort of thing. So they have episodes focusing on press freedoms and the press being manipulated and censored and things about brainwashing dissidents and sort of breaking their spirits to avoid having voices that would speak out against what the government is doing. And that ties into what we mentioned in our last episode, what 1990 calls the adult rehabilitation centers, or ARCs. And that is something we gradually learn more about through the course of the series.
Yes, and with the prospect of dissident voices being sent to the ARCs for reprogramming, then obviously the resistance has to possibly find some way of getting them out of the country before that can happen. So there's a fair bit, particularly in the first series, I think, about, you know, trying to get people out of the country, or on occasion sometimes getting them into the country. But we also then get issues about their families. Sometimes their families are safe abroad, or maybe they're not safe because they're still in the UK. So we get lots of that sort of stuff going on.
Some of the first things we learn about this world is how emigration is restricted, and how people and groups like Jim Kyle and the organization he's working with get people out when, for one reason or another, they really do need to get out of the country, and the government and the PCD is preventing that and making it look like they're being quite reasonable in how they allow some people out, but are actually really quite harsh in that.
Yes, and you remember, you might remember from 1970s Britain news stories that Britain was very concerned about something called the brain drain, the idea that our brightest minds might be so poorly rewarded and so fed up with things as they were in Britain in the 1970s that they would go abroad for increased opportunities and we would lose all our, you know, brightest scientists and so on. And that's something that's covered in 1990, where they very much use the incredibly tight restrictions on travel and movement in order to keep various people that they need in the country, unless, of course, as you say, Brian, Kyle and his band of resistance men and women can somehow get them out.
Yes, that's right. It's definitely an important part of this show.
And of course, you know, it's 1990, it's dystopian, so we've got rationing, we've got ID cards and union cards, which you must have to be able to exist as a citizen and to work and to gain privileges, which includes food and goods. We've got a lot of computers, particularly by the PCD, who've got some high tech. We've got surveillance. We've got police brutality. We've got lots of themes explored in this series in quite a clever way, really, the way they've set it not too far from 1977, so that it's close enough to what we were seeing around us on the streets of Britain at the time.
Yes, and something this show did maybe better than anything else I've seen, than any other show or movie I've seen, is the idea that rationing and control of privileges can be used to control just about everything and control what people say, what people do. The threat of basically taking someone's entire lifestyle away from them or downgrading them to a less comfortable life, that can be used to control people to a very great extent.
Yes, gripping and interesting stuff. Now, we talked last time about some of the events and themes of the first series. And as we say, it was successful enough to come back in late 1978 for another 8-episode series. But of course, there were some changes, I suspect possibly because of actors' availability or non-availability, I suppose, Brian. So we get Delly Lomas, the interesting deputy controller of the PCD, who had a sort of conflicted relationship with Kyle. She has been moved sideways. She's no longer in the show. Her character has been moved somewhere else. And instead, we get a new deputy controller, Lynn Blake, played by another attractive actress, Lisa Harrow. And this one is very, you know, Lynn Blake is very specifically mentioned as a possible old flame of Jim Kyle's. They knew each other when they were younger. They may have had a romantic entanglement then. And so we do get that constant sort of tension in their relationship in this second series.
Yes, and Lynn Blake is actually a very different character from Delly Lomas, where Lomas had basically no sense of ethics or moral compass. Lynn Blake very much does have quite strong morals and ethics, and we don't always know where she stands because she has a genuine connection with Jim Kyle and often seems to be working with him and on the same side as him, but also working with the PCD and very much on the other side. So we don't always know where she is or what takes priority. And that makes her quite an interesting character.
Yes. Now, we'd also seen in the first series Kyle having frequent discussions with his newspaper editor. But again, we get new personnel for the second series.
Yes, there's a new newspaper editor at the Star paper, this time played by Clive Swift, who we remember from the Ghost Story for Christmas series and other things like that. And similar to the original newspaper editor, but I think they move things along a little bit in that it becomes more clear with this editor that he is quite fearful of the PCD. And while the original editor did want to stick to what they were allowed to do and not move too far out, the Clive Swift character is very much about sticking to what they have to do so he and his family will not be in danger.
Yes, I mean, one of the things PCD definitely does is use people's family as their safety of the family as a sort of bargaining tool to get enforce what they want from various people. And we do see that quite clearly with Clive Swift's editor, that his family, when they're put at risk, you know, it begins to mean much more to him in his role at the newspaper, whereas we didn't really see the editor's family in the first series. But it's interesting stuff. They keep getting at various people through their families.
Yes, and it's the safety of the family, but also sometimes the privilege of the family, because the PCD can drop them one level and say, well, now you have to move to this smaller apartment and have less space and be in a neighborhood that isn't as nice and so on and so forth.
Yeah, it's interesting the way the PCD exert their control. And we do see, as you say, this dropping down the status ladder and the resulting impact that has on people.
We also get the idea of elections, and this authoritarian state came in through democratic elections. And the question is, what happens when they have to hold the next set of elections? And there's a question of whether they will find a way to cancel the elections altogether or hold the general election in such a way that it's fixed, so it looks like it's an election and everyone will stay in, or at least the PCD and all of these approaches and policies will stay. It isn't clear what will happen, and that is an element that is there as a question for much of the second series.
And we perhaps should mention that the first series ended with a sort of victory of sorts for Kyle, in that he had managed to deliver some sort of blow to the PCD. But of course, in the second series, we're not sure if that makes things worse or better. What will the PC do in retaliation against Kyle? Will he and his team continue the fight for civil liberties? Is the net tightening on them? And can Kyle control some members of the resistance who are basically turning more and more to thoughts of violence as a solution? So, you know, there's lots of interesting stuff that they add in the second series as well that keeps you watching.
Yeah, and Herbert Skardon is still there as the head of the PCD, and he is, if anything, more dangerous in Series 2, because he seems to be becoming more unstable over time, and very scary, because you don't know what he'll resort to.
Yes, Herbert Skardon, Controller Herbert Skardon of the PCD, is a fascinating character through the two series. We perhaps should mention, because you'd mentioned her before we started recording, Brian, that the actress Yvonne Mitchell, in her last role, plays the new Home Secretary, Kate Smith, in the second series, who Skardon sort of reports to. But also, you know, the way that character develops in Series 2 is perhaps unexpected. So there are changing and shifting power balances, which is great stuff.
Yeah, the Home Secretary in the first season didn't actually do all that much. He oversaw things, but didn't exert much power or control over the PCD. But once Kate Smith is there, that changes things. And she puts pressure on Skardon. She controls things and does different things that complicates things in the second series in a way that's very interesting.
Yes, it is very interesting what she adds to the show.
So looking a bit more at how 1990 saw the future, you know, this was being made in 1970 and 78, 1990 does not have a lot of science fiction trappings. We don't see lots of advanced technology, although we know that they have powerful computers and surveillance devices that are being used extensively. But we don't see a lot of sort of strange and advanced technology. And we have this sort of interesting approach that we have a slow reveal to how society has changed. And it doesn't seem that different at the beginning, and we learn that things really are very different and very bad in society. As we learn about things like identity cards and privilege cards and the rationing system and the level of surveillance that they have and the drugging of the population that is there in some cases, as we had mentioned earlier with the idea of misery pills and happy pills, that the state of mind and the mood of people is sometimes dictated by the PCD and the government.
Yes, it is fascinating the way they sort of depict 1990 and the changes. As you say, Brian, because at first glance, it doesn't seem that much different from 1977 Britain. I mean, even the cars, they're not particularly, they haven't shown any particular advances. We mentioned Faceless and his green 2CV. We see a couple of sleek, red, modern-looking cars, but they're actually Jensen Interceptors, which again was a quite advanced, modern-looking car from 1970s. Princess Anne famously drove one. So, but, you know, apart from that, it's the subtle things, like you say, Brian, you know, the impact on society of various restrictions and a bit of tech that the PCD have. So it's, you know, the way they do it, I thought was clever. And of course, I also mentioned last time, men's tailoring is subtly different, particularly the suits that Herbert Skardon wears. Just showing slight changes, enough to say, oh yes, there's something different here. You know, it is 13 years in the future. So yeah, I thought that was all very well done.
Yeah, I think because of things like that, the clothing and the look of it is not quite as dated as you might expect for a show like this. In the first series, Deli Lomas does sort of dress in very high fashion 1970s style, perhaps recalling Servalon and Blake Seven from around the same time. But yeah, we do get some interesting choices in the look of it that are a little bit subtle, I think, which is nice.
Yes, I mean, Deli Lomas, she wears some fantastic dresses. She looks fabulous. And with her short hair often pulled back off her face, I was reminded of Servalan. They're slightly different characters, but some of their fashions are very similar. And of course, as you say, Brian, those two shows, very close, I think separated only by a few months.
Yeah, it would be something like that. Also along those lines, there is possibly a bit of a similarity between Blake from Blake 7 and Kyle. Both are these sort of idealist characters as the one man or the small group working against the system and the sort of impossible task, and have sort of slightly similar deliveries in how they speak their lines in some ways, just in those two particular characters, I think. And that's something that I find a little bit interesting, that comparison. But in both cases, sort of really strong strong performances that sort of make those shows and, you know, give them a lot of their character.
Yeah, what was going through TV writers' minds in the late 1970s? Certainly, when I saw some of the scenes between Kyle and Deli Lomas, I did think of Blake and Servalan. So, yeah, fascinating.
Yeah, very different shows, but just that bit of similarity, which is nice. The other show we have to mention is The Guardians, which we have covered, and that was a number of years earlier. But it also introduced us to a future dystopian Britain, and use some similar techniques in character and story to sort of gradually introduce us to some of the things that were happening in this world. Although I think 1990 was much more gradual and subtle than that. But both were series that did sort of very interesting world building and sort of cautioning of what could possibly go wrong in future developments in society and government.
Yeah, what a great show that was as well. You know, another little gem that popped up on DVD from the 70s, as you say, some years earlier. I suppose that there's another distinction in that it's sort of implied that the government in The Guardians is obviously extremely right-wing. But interestingly, several articles about 1990 point out that the government that's taken over here is probably a socialist government.
It does seem that way.
Yeah.
That's right. It was very clear in The Guardians that it was a fascist government, and the communists do appear in there as well, where in 1990, it isn't quite as clear, but it certainly seems like it's a far-left socialist government, or at least started that way.
Yeah. Interesting comparisons.
So we should get to some of our thoughts and feelings about 1990 a little more than we already have. So, Eamon, what did you like about 1990?
I like the way it's written. I should point out, you know, we'll be talking about this again in a moment, possibly as a negative point. It is quite a talky show. It's a lot of people in rooms talking. But some of the stuff that's getting discussed is gripping, it's challenging, and the way that the writers slowly reveal the world of 1990 to us, that it's not all info dumped on us in the very first episode, I thought that was really quite well done, and you know, in a certain way sort of you know, it makes demands of its audience. It needs us to pay attention so that we can pick up on what's going on.
I would agree with that. And it does that sort of slow reveal of just how far this society and government have gone. It does that very well. And you get these ideas of, we hear about the ARCs, the adult rehabilitation centers, very early on, but it's only later that we start to learn what they actually are and what they're actually doing. So I would agree that the writing is very strong and it has some very nice things in that sort of slow reveal. I also very much liked the performances in this. I think Edward Woodward as Kyle and Robert Lang as Skardon were both superb. I think having Barbara Kellerman and then Lisa Harrow as the deputy controllers there were very strong performances here. And I think that added a lot in terms of the tension between characters, as some of the ambiguities in some of the characters, and also the journeys that that many of them take. I really liked a lot with those performances.
Yes, I mean, I quite agree. I think the cast are great throughout. It's one of those shows from, you know, a while back that you look at, and if you're familiar with British TV, you'll say, oh, it's that person or that guy or that lady or that one. There's some very familiar actors in it from British TV of the time. There's a couple of British Invaders sort of actors that we're familiar with. There's a brief but impressive performance by the actor John Paul, who we remember as Dr. Quist in Doomwatch, another gloomy British show from the 1970s. And you spotted another Doctor Who connection, Brian.
Yes, Richard Herndl has a lovely guest appearance in one episode. He was, of course, the first Doctor in The Five Doctors. He was the recast version of the first Doctor. And we get to see him here in quite a nice guest performance in one episode.
And, of course, we also remember that he was also briefly in The Guardians. So along with Doomwatch we've mentioned. We've got The Guardians. We've mentioned Blake 7. There was a certain sort of gloomy dystopian feel to British television in the 1970s, perhaps reflecting some of the conflicts and tensions going on in Britain at that time, when the rosy future of the 60s had perhaps not turned out the way people expected, and harder and grimmer realities had come home to roost.
Yes, we definitely had a strong feel of that in this show, for sure. Is there anything more on the negative side that you would want to mention?
Well, I'll mention, you know, there is a couple of things that it does require, as I say, very close attention. It's an interesting and brave choice by the writers and directors and producers to slowly reveal the world over several episodes. And it does make me wonder how much pre-information or trailing there was in the Radio Times. Through the marvellous Radio Times Genome Project, I can find the original listings for when the show was broadcast, but I haven't been able to track down original, you know, if there was any articles in the Radio Times about a new series, about Edward Woodward, about what it was going to be, you know, concerning. So there is that. It is a talky show. As I said, it's a lot of people in rooms talking. Often, as you said in the last episode, Brian, in the dining club that used to be the House of Lords. So we do see quite a lot of that.
It is a slightly challenging show in some ways, because you really need to follow those things fairly closely. And in the early episodes, it can seem a little bit slow at times, and a little bit, we're sort of wondering, you know, why is this sort of a big deal? You know, why is this such an issue? And it gradually ramps up that intensity.
Yes, that's a good word, actually, challenging. You know, it does challenge you as a viewer to pay attention and try and figure out what's going on. And of course, there is the fact that it's, you know, because it's not so far away from the Britain that was we were living in 1977 and 78, in a way, perhaps it's slightly, you know, it could be interpreted as more terrifying than Orwell's 1984. I mean, you know, we remember how scary Peter Cushing, his plight in Nigel Neill's adaptation of 1984 from way back in 1954 on BBC was. But, you know, if you think about what's going on in 1990 and how close it is, and how, you know, such a possible future that an economic disaster would force a socialist government to take harsh and brutal steps, you know, some of that does challenge us and make us think, oh my goodness, you know, could it happen here? How close is it to where we are now?
It does those types of things very well indeed. Do you have any favorite episodes or any episodes that you want to mention as being remarkable?
I think, you know, there's a couple of episodes where Kyle is particularly in danger, where his family are threatened. And of course, there is the last episode of season one, which I think is, you know, you're probably going to mention yourself, Brian, Non-Citizen, where, you know, Kyle comes up against the brutal realities of what happens if you're stripped of your 1990s privileges.
That is the episode that I had in mind. It's incredibly gripping. But there are a lot of very strong episodes in here. There's one in series two that deals with Kyle's editor and pressure being put on him. And that is a very interesting and very disturbing episode as well.
Yes, I mean, that's terrible. You know, it is a tricky watch, that episode. I remember it. Is that the one, it's called something like Death by a Little Brown Envelope or something like that?
That's right. It's very intense and it's quite terrifying.
Yeah, so it is an intense show. And, you know, once you get on board with what's happening, it's, as you say, it's scary stuff. When you see the effects that this is having, or the PCD, the things they will do to retain control. So, yeah, you know, well written, well acted. I think it looks great. As I say, I admired the fashion choices. I think they're fantastic, and does help the show not look quite so dated as perhaps it might do as a show from the late 70s.
Yeah, it does look like a show from the late 70s. It looks like 1977 or 78, not like actual 1990. But that's okay. It's a show that has a fairly subtle look to it, and that's what it's meant to be. It's not about, you know, a big, bold, futuristic look.
No, that's right. We should also mention that as a show from the 70s, it does have the slight unfortunate note that everybody seems to smoke. The lead characters smoke frequently. And there's also a fair amount of almost Mad Men style alcohol. So whenever anybody visits an office, usually the first thing they do is fix a drink, which presumably, I guess, is the actors drinking a lot of cold tea by the looks of it, Brian. Supposed to be whiskey. No doubt. Now, of course, the other thing that 1990 has is it does have some technology. It does have depictions of the use of computers, particularly by the state. And I wondered, you know, Brian, this is one of your specialist subjects. What was your feeling about the way they used the depiction of computers and the implications of them in this show?
Well, it's interesting, and I am professionally a computer person, so I know a bit about these sorts of things. The computers that we see are definitely from the era that this was made. It's definitely about mainframes and dumb terminals and that sort of thing. So they didn't particularly try to go to futuristic looking or futuristic designs of computer technology. But the way that the computers were used for things like recognizing people by face and by voice from surveillance footage and sort of gathering large amounts of information and extracting things to find out information on specific people or to discover where there were groups of people gathering to discuss certain sorts of things. That, I thought, was done very well indeed. And I think they got a lot of that right with these sort of data mining things and facial recognition and voice recognition. It was very much like how computers would be used by this sort of society if it were being done now. So I thought the way that things were being used in this, in terms of computer technology, was actually very well done.
Oh, okay. That's interesting, as ever, to get your insights on this stuff. Yeah, I thought, you know, it impressed me. Okay, I haven't asked you if you had any particular negative points about this show yourself.
I don't have a lot. It would really only be that it is a little bit challenging as a show, and, you know, it's good to know that going in. And at times it can be a little bit slow in its pacing and slow to reveal things about it, which, you know, can be both a positive thing and a negative thing. Overall, those are really nitpicks. I think really it's very strong.
Okay. Anything else to add about 1990 before we get to our recommendations?
I think we should go to our recommendations.
Okay. Do you want to start us off?
Okay. I will give this a strong recommendation. I really enjoyed 1990. I think it has very interesting and challenging sort of strong drama in it and very interesting dystopian ideas. I think it's well worth watching. So if you can get a hold of this and watch it, I would recommend it.
Yes, it's going to be a recommendation from me as well. I think it's an interesting long form of television drama where you have to pay attention and stick with it. It would perhaps reward, you know, one episode a week rather than the slightly rushed version of watching it that I've done for our podcast. So yeah, if you're interested in the idea of, you know, Britain in the late 70s looking forward to 1990 in a scary fashion, and you can take a show where there's a lot of talking with minimum action, then I would certainly check it out, particularly now they've combined the two series into one box set. So yeah, it's a double thumbs up from us here on British Invaders. A challenging show, but a very interesting one.
it still has a lot of very interesting things to say. A lot of things in it are still relevant.
And as ever, if you've had a chance to see it, do let us know what you think on the Facebook group.
Absolutely. So, in summary, 1990 introduced us to newspaper writer Jim Kyle, and also to the Public Control Department, or PCD, which was this government department that is the key surveillance and enforcement element to this 1990 era authoritarian government in the United Kingdom. And we also meet other members of the resistance, as Jim Kyle is secretly part of this resistance organization, and we meet a number of people working with the PCD itself and with the government. And we get a gradual reveal of how the government controls people's movements and people's privileges, and uses these adult rehabilitation centers, or ARCs, to basically put people out of the way when they are speaking out too much, and gives us a lot of very strong and very sort of harsh warnings about what could go wrong in future governments and the future development of this sort of authoritarian government. So we get this very interesting slow reveal about what their vision of the future would look like.
Fascinating. Tricky show to sum up, Brian, and well done. There's a lot going on in 1990 with Edward Woodward.
Yes, it's really interesting, powerful stuff.
And do come back next time. You know we've been looking for a more classic adaptation of Robert Louis Stevenson's Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And we think we found one from ITV in 2003, a show starring John Hannah in a 90-minute TV movie. So we'll be talking about that next time.
Yes, that's one to look forward to for sure. Jekyll and Hyde, always an interesting topic in any of the variations. Until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com, where you can find all of our past episodes covering all sorts of shows, 1970s and otherwise. The Guardians that we mentioned is in there. Or you can find us on Facebook. If you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find us there, and we would love to have you join in some of the conversations we have going on there.
Yes, it might be time for a 1990 giveaway on the Facebook group, so check in when this episode comes out. And come and find us at VogNetwork.com, the Voice of Geeks network, where they put out internet streaming radio shows. British Invaders go out Mondays and Tuesdays, but you'll find several other great shows there as well at VogNetwork.com. Tell them Brian and Eamon said hello.
Please do. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. It's Eamon in England also signing off.